Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. 101 years in business should tell you something. Tells me everything. It's even better when you meet the people. I've had the privilege of meeting the people. They're exactly the kind of people I want to deal with all the time. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Matt Leon from KYW in a few moments. Our thanks to Mark Brennan, who joined us here in the Sunbury Motors studio the previous half hour. Check it out on the Steve Jones Show podcast. Aaron Snoll, Mike Tyson's former trainer, joins us in the final half hour. But first, our play-by-play call of the day.
Ripping the puck back to center. The Penguins stop it right there. Noli Mehta off the left side of Hagelin. Got a man going to the net. Here's Fair shooting, scoring! Eric Fair wristing the puck by Martin Jones. Oh, start frying the jumbo, Homer. Extra crispy, please. The Pens have a 3-1 lead. Eric Fair.
I love Mike Lang. He's just so good. Eric Fair with the goal that put it away late in the third period last night at the Tank. The Penguins won the game 3-1, now lead the series 3-1. And for the first time, listen to this, Sean. If the Penguins win on Thursday night, it'll be the first time that any Pittsburgh sports team has clinched a championship in the city since Bill Masarowski's home run.
1960.
I mean, how about that? They have not clinched a title of any kind in the city limits since 1960 on the final swing of the game and the series by Bill Masarowski when it sailed over Yogi Berra's head and left. Amazing.
They pull it off. A lot of people will be calling off work on Friday.
Can't blame them.
Yeah. So if you have folks that do business in Pittsburgh or planning on doing some business in Pittsburgh on Friday, you may have to push her back till Monday. Well, again, they may have the championship parade on Monday if they win on Thursday. So they may have to push back even further.
All right, let's bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. We'll shift gears from Pittsburgh sports to Philadelphia sports. And Matt, welcome back. It is always great to have you with us.
Always a pleasure.
We were talking about Ali. Obviously, you're in Philadelphia, where Joe Frazier, that's where he set up shop for many, many years. Ali was not universally loved in Philadelphia because of the Frazier connection, but in the end, I'm sure there are a lot of people there that have had a lot of great things to say about him.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, you're talking about an icon, probably at a term that gets thrown around too much, but you talk about a person that really helped to shape a generation and in many ways shape a country. Muhammad Ali was incredibly special, and boxing was kind of the vehicle, and by the end, he had really become universally beloved. So it was sad to hear that, but he was one of a kind.
In fact, I started out the segment by saying, look, he is the perfect example that time heals all wounds. I mean, he passed away in almost a feeling of sainthood.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, and most of the things that you, when you think about the quote-unquote controversial parts of his life, they were relegated to footnote status, like kind of, oh, by the way. I think a lot of the stuff we kind of look at now and go, really? You know, I mean, obviously it was a different world then, but, he shaped the generation. He was really, really something.
Yeah. All right, let's get to, with the NBA draft coming up, the Sixers certainly have some flexibility What are you hearing about their flexibility as to how they might want to handle things that will then shape how they draft?
It's kind of interesting because with Brian Colangelo now in charge, I mean, not that you could ever read Sam Hinkie's hands, but you knew with Sam Hinkie they were going to play the long game. With Colangelo, you don't quite maybe have a feel yet for what the direction is. I mean, he is going to be a little bit more win-now-centric, if you will. I still think it's a slam dunk. It'll be Ben Simmons at one. But I think some other things could be in play. I think you could see the rumors are rampant that they're talking about moving Okafor or Noel. I think moving Noel would be a mistake. I would be open to moving Jahlil Okafor. But I would not be surprised if they do that. And, you know, with the other two first-round picks they have at 24 and 26, I think it's very possible you'll probably see players, if they stay there, taken that will not play this year. The one rumor that seemed to gain a lot of traction was Nerlens Noel for Jeff Teague, the point guard who I think has 1 year left on his contract. I mean, Teague's a very good player, and they obviously, the Sixers are deficient in the backcourt, but I think that would be maybe a short-term gain, long-term loss. I just think that Nerlens Noel's skill set is so incredibly unique that I don't want to give that up. And not to say Jahlil Okafor is not a great player, but I think you can get those points in other ways, especially if, and I feel like we say this every time we talk Sixers, if Joel Embiid is healthy, that's going to change a lot of things. And that's really the future of the franchise is really hinging on that right now. I mean, if Embiid is healthy, he has the chance to be that transcendent player that changes a franchise's direction on a dime. If he turns out to be just a guy, then they've got more and more issues.
Is there an issue of communication between the communications department, the offensive coordinator, and Doug Peterson in Philadelphia as to who actually is the number one quarterback in OTAs?
I don't understand that. I don't understand why you don't get everybody in a room and just say, listen, even if it's not true, this is what we're saying. I don't get why you wouldn't. I don't understand a lot of what they've done with the quarterback position, frankly. If you look at the moves they've made since the beginning of March till now, you almost kind of get the feeling that every move was made in a vacuum and not putting a grand plan of, okay, this is what we do. It's kind of like they like the idea of Sam Bradford, then they kind of like the idea of Chase Daniel, and then they really like the idea of Carson Wentz. As far as who the number one is, I think it's Sam Bradford. I think what Frank Reich was kind of trying to clumsily say was that they were going to foster a lot of competition, and of course everybody is just waiting in the tall grass for anything that points to a quarterback controversy. I would be really surprised if, barring injury, it's not Sam Bradford to start, but I don't think they're going to sit around and let Sam Bradford really struggle and not maybe go from there.
Is there anything out of their OTAs right now of any interest other than that, or is it pretty much standard operation?
No Fletcher Cox, no Darren Sproles. Of course, those workouts are voluntary, so that was probably the biggest news. They start mandatory minicamp tomorrow, and word on the street is that Sproles has already reported and that Cox is on his way. So if those guys are both there and taking part, then your news is really minimal. I mean, obviously, you're always worried about catastrophic injuries in these workouts. But past that, if those two guys are there and taking part, then it's just going to be all eyes on the quarterback position.
All right. The Phillies obviously have hit the skid. Everybody expected them to hit. What do you think that we're seeing right now? What are still some of the good spots that you're seeing in the ball club?
Well, I think you're still, the last couple of games you've seen the offense pick up a little bit. That could be more of an indictment of a terrible Brewers staff. But you take the victories where you can get them. I think you just continue to watch the maturation of some of the young pitchers. Aaron Nola pitched 6 shutout innings yesterday with 9 strikeouts. He continues to really evolve into, if not an ace, then a top of the rotation type of arm. I mean, Jeremy Hellickson's been very, just about exactly what you could hope for, the best case scenario with him. The one real, I would say, disappointment in the rotation I don't even want to say disappointment, but I think people got really excited about Vince Velasquez after he had that electric game against the Padres where he struck out 16.
Right.
And since then, he has struggled a bit, and he struggled more with pitch economy, where he's just taking too many pitches. He's taking 95, 100 pitches to get through four or five, get into the sixth innings, and he's not giving himself a chance to succeed. And if you watch him pitch, he's not walking the ballpark. He's getting ahead of guys 0-2, and he's struggling to put guys away. And he's also struggling with foul ball. He had one start against Miami 2-3 starts ago where the Marlins had 31 foul balls against him in five innings. It was something you saw with Cole Hamels a few years ago. When Cole went through a little bit of a struggle that year after they won the World Series, they struggled a little bit. And even a couple years after that, when he got things turned around, but he wasn't getting a lot of decisions because he wasn't going as deep as people were used to. He was getting teams would just waste so many pitches against him that his numbers would be all right, but he'd only be getting 5-6 innings because he's throwing 110 pitches. I think you're seeing some of that with Velasquez, a little frustrated after his last start. I think in the big picture, this is just part of the learning curve, but it's something to keep an eye on. Tonight, they'll start Adam Morgan, who has not been good since he was called up from AAA, and I think if he struggles tonight, of course he's playing, pitching against the best lineup in baseball and the Cubs,
yeah.
But if he struggles tonight, you might see them go to a youngster from AAA to take that spot because Morgan's got an ERA of over 7, and early on he showed some signs, but he's just left way too many balls over the middle of the plate the last 2-3 starts, and today he's just been tattooed, so a big night for Morgan tonight.
If you go from the Brewers to the Cubs, it's not comfortable.
When they played the Cubs a couple weeks ago at Wrigley, as you would expect, they were. It looked like a team that's trying to find itself playing against the best team in baseball. So you'll look for a little bit of a better showing in this series, but it will be an uphill battle for the Phils.
All right, hey Matt, thanks, appreciate it as always. Great to hear from you.
Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Matt Lee on KYW in Philadelphia. Final half hour, Aaron Snoll, former trainer for Mike Tyson, joins us on the show as we continue. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sunbury Motors Kia knows you've been working hard.
That's why they've extended the Summers on Us sales event.
In your reach because the Summer's on Us sales event has been extended at Sunbury Motors Kia. Buy a new in-stock 2016 Optima, Optima Hybrid, Forte, or Soul and pay nothing for the summer. Your first payment won't be due until November. With Kia taking care of your first two payments and 90 days deferred payments, you get up to 5 months before your first payment is due. That's November, when the summer will be a distant memory. But that's not all. You'll also get 0% financing for up to 66 months. And with Kia's 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, we're talking a worry-free ride to your vacation destination with no payments to make. Sunbury Motors Kia on the strip in Hummel's Wharf at sunburymotors.com.
Tax and tax extra. 0% APR financing to well-qualified customers through KMF. Restrictions apply. Warranty is a limited powertrain warranty. For details, see retailer or go to kia.com.
Aaron Snoll, final half hour, former trainer for Mike Tyson, among others, will join us with his remembrance of Muhammad Ali. Tomorrow, no show because the Phillies will be on. Tony Knopf, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management, on the business of sports coming up on Thursday. Dick Girardi is now confirmed for Friday's show to discuss not only the Belmont Stakes, but also his encounter with Muhammad Ali back in 1974 when Dick and two buddies just... I mean, Dick was not in the newspaper business at the time. He and his two buddies said, look, we've got to go meet Ali. Let's drive to Deer Lake. Okay. And guess what? Who greeted him at the door? The champ. We'll talk to him about that, but also about the Belmont. Where last year, a little different feel going into the race because there's no Triple Crown on the line this time. Exaggerator, of course, will run again. Exaggerator will run in all three races. So, great to have you with us. The the NBA Finals, of course, and the Stanley Cup Final. Now, the Stanley Cup Finals now worked its way to a point where the Penguins can win it on their home ice at Consol Energy Thursday night. The NBA Finals, I think after listening to this show now, and this is into the fifth year that you've listened to this show, and, you know, there are just certain things I think that in this genre turn me off, and I've talked about that. One of them is I'm not big on you need to do this for your legacy, and the other one is, you know, outright blaming a star when something doesn't get done. Now, your stars do have to be your stars. LeBron James is an interesting case because those who are writing about, well, he's been to seven NBA finals now, and he only has two wins. And, oh, look at Jerry West. Do you think Jerry West was any less of a player? You know what Jerry West's biggest problems were? Jerry West's biggest problems in the NBA finals were named Bill Russell, John Havlicek, Bob Cousy, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, Tom Heinsohn, Bill Sharman, Satch Sanders. I mean, those were his biggest problems. The Celtics were just that good. They were just that good. Then later on, the Celtics mixed in Bailey Howell, and they mixed in Don Nelson. They're just that good. Sometimes the other guy's better. It's not Jerry West's fault. You know how good you have to be to get there? You have to be really good to get there. You have to be really good to get there. And, you know, Fran Tarkenton got to the Super Bowl three times, lost all three. Why? Well, the three Super Bowls Fran Tarkenton happened to lose happened to be to, Larry Zonka and the Miami Dolphins, Jack Hamm and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Ken Stabler and the Oakland Raiders. They lost to three great teams. I mean, the Vikings got there four times. Tarkenton got there three times. Does that mean that they're in the trash heap? Of course not. It's absurd. You don't realize how good you've got to be to get there. We diminish that too much. For LeBron James, how often have we heard or read, I don't care whether it's a columnist or a show like this or a show that's on TV that's like this, well, you know, Peyton Manning really, to enhance his legacy, must win a second Super Bowl. Yeah. Well, okay, LeBron James hasn't won one NBA championship. He has won two, you know. So didn't he already cross that threshold? He doesn't need me defending him. But after a while, some of this talk becomes a little bit absurd. How great a golfer do you think Arnold Palmer was? There is the name that is synonymous with golf. When you talk about the pantheon of golf, most fans immediately, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, Tiger Woods, and then you go back a bit, Ben Hogan, Gene Sarazen. Yeah. Byron Nelson, people like that. Gary Player. Gary can't leave out Gary Player. Bobby Jones. But Arnold Palmer, quote, only won one U.S. Open. Does that make him any less a player? No, you know how hard it is to win one U.S. Open? Mario Andretti, when you talk about racing today, what great race drivers come to mind? In fact, if you put a list of 10 names out there, Mario Andretti's one of the 10. I'll bet him out more than 50% of the people pick out his name right away. Yeah, I know who Mario Andretti is. He only won one in the Indianapolis 500. You know how hard it is to win one? Dale Earnhardt Sr. won one Daytona 500. You know how hard it is to win one? When LeBron James went to Cleveland, he went back to Cleveland. I think there's just one area that he did not count on when he went back to Cleveland. And that's because none of us realize this. I don't think you realize the Golden State Warriors would resurrect themselves like this. On the show 4 years ago, I go back to 2012, I said there was one NBA team, 4 years ago, one NBA team that I would stay up late to watch all the time because I thought they were the most entertaining team in basketball, and that was the Golden State Warriors. I said it on the show about 4 or 5 times that spring. And they hadn't won anything yet, and I didn't think they were going to be NBA champions. So LeBron goes back to Cleveland, and what happens? The Warriors get really, really good. They grow up. Draymond Green grows up. Steph Curry goes off the charts. Klay Thompson, great. So this LeBron James thing is just, it's bizarre. You know what? Here's one other thing about LeBron James I'll say. He's going to play in the Olympics this summer. He's played in the 4, 8, 12, and now he's going to play in the 2016 Olympics. You can climb on John McEnroe for his behavior all you want, but you know what? John McEnroe never once missed Davis Cup for the U.S. He always played for his country. So is LeBron James. Look, part of LeBron James' problem is LeBron James. He's been so great in his career, he has raised a bar and a standard that only he can climb to.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I'm not sure where I'd put my money on that, would you? Man, I heard McGranahan has a good left hand, but Lawrence is a very defensive fighter. Kind of like a Floyd Mayweather of Sunbury. All right, I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Mertz family's had this for 101 years. You can't be in business for 101 years unless you really care about your customers. You can't. They're the best. It's great to have them on board. But thanks to Mark Brennan, who joined us here in the Sunbury Motors studio in the 3:30 half hour. Our thanks to Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia, who joined us in the previous half hour. You can check that out on the Steve Jones Show and the podcast as well. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. Whomever hacked into the NFL account declaring that Roger Goodell was dead, and of course it's not true, but not only that, they hacked in a second time. So I don't know who to give the bozo to. The person that hacked in, that's obvious, one. I'd also give it to the IT guy at the NFL because, I mean, what? How did the guy get in a second time? You didn't change the password after the first one? Come on. All right. What a career Aaron Snowell had. Great trainer who trained some of the great fighters in the game. Among them, he trained Mike Tyson. Yes, he trained Mike Tyson. Tim Austin, Tim Witherspoon, Larry Donald, Owen Black. He's trained champions in his career, and we're very pleased to have him on the show today. Aaron, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, Steve, it's great to be on your show. Man, it's a pleasure, Steve, to be on here with you.
Obviously, with the passing of Muhammad Ali, it's conjured up a lot of memories for people. He crossed paths with so many people along the way. What were some of the areas where Ali just absolutely impressed you as someone in the business?
Well, first of all, I'd like to tell you, Steve, and the audience, is that bar none, Ali walked with kings and queens and kept the common person touch. You know, everybody who met Muhammad Ali felt like they always had a personal experience and a story to tell about Ali. You know, how I got in the business, Muhammad Ali's training camp is 6 miles from Pottsville, Pennsylvania. Deer Lake. He came there in the 1970s. That's when our family met him, when he first came up to Deer Lake. And that's how my journey into training professional fighters started. Ali gave our family a special training session, and he used to talk to us all the time. Some of the main things that Ali gave me personally, I would not have been able to train as many world champions as I did, and it's a lot. You know, 30-some world champions, including Mike Tyson, Tim Witherspoon, Larry Donald, Francois Botha. The list is long, fine, but distinguished. And major upsets when Frankie Randall beat Julio Cesar Chavez at the opening of the MGM Grand Hotel in Casino, and when Frankie Randall was a 35-1 underdog in that fight. And Frankie was able to pull off the upset we did. You know, and that those type of fights and those type of upsets were things that being around Ali at his training camp in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, you know, you experienced that because not only did Ali himself pass knowledge on, but he kept great fighters around him, such as Kit Gavilan with the bolo punch, Ike Williams, Willie Pep, Kitten Haywood from Philadelphia. I mean, Stanley Sadler. Not only that, he had great trainers around him. Angelo Dundee, Boudini Brown, Wally Youngblood. Those guys were with Sugar Ray Robinson, who Ali adored and admired. And he patterned his style after Sugar Ray Robinson in the boxing ring. So it was something unique that he passed on to us.
You mentioned in that answer Angelo Dundee. All but two of Ali's fights he was in the corner for as the trainer. The first one he wasn't, and then he was on Jimmy Ellis's corner because he was also training him at the same time. There were some people that wanted to remove in the entourage Angelo Dundee, and Ali said absolutely not, because he says Angelo is loyal to me, I'm loyal to him. What was special about their relationship where... Obviously, did Angelo have the ability to tell him no, champ, and Ali respected that?
Well, here's what I know personally, what Ali told me personally when I was young.
Yeah.
He told me if it wasn't for Angelo Dundee, he would have never been champion. And I asked him, well, why was that? He said, man, Sonny Liston was a killer, man. He hurt you everywhere. He said, my eyes were burning when I came back to the corner. That's the way he was saying it.
Yeah.
My eyes were burning, and I was getting ready to quit. And I was telling Angelo to stop the fight, and Angelo wiped my eyes out and pushed me back out there and told me, go do it. And he said, if he didn't push me back out there, he said, I would have quit on the stool, and I would have never been champion of the world. And that's why he kept, I believe, he kept Angelo Dundee with him.
Oh, and Angelo Dundee, I think it was Sugar Ray Leonard at one point looked at him and said, hey, you're blowing it, kid.
yeah, he did. Angelo with Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yeah.
He did similar to the same thing. But Angelo was, him and his brother Chris Dundee, they were something special when it came to boxing. His brother Chris was a promoter out of Philly, and they're Pennsylvania guys. Angelo Dundee is from South Philadelphia.
Right.
And his brother Chris promoted fights too, and that's how they ended up down in Miami Beach. The Great Fifth Street Gym down in Miami, where Bo Jack used to be down there. Some other guys, Angelo trained. Angelo Dundee trained a lot of great fighters. And matter of fact, you know, I have went up against Angelo in quite a few fights. We trained people together with some fighters. I lost the heavyweight championship when Tim Witherspoon, after he beat Greg Page. Angelo had Pinklin Thomas. We lost in a split decision to Tim Witherspoon did to Pinklin Thomas, and Angelo Dundee trained Pinklin Thomas for the WBC heavyweight champion of the world. So, you know, and also Michael second to none. I trained Michael second to none with Angelo Dundee. Angelo Dundee had a trainer's contract with Michael Nunn, and Don King had picked up Michael Nunn, and Angelo couldn't make it to the training camp to train. And Angelo had called me and said, look, I got a trainer's contract, and I don't mind you training Michael Nunn with me, and we'll work together. And we got to Memphis, Tennessee. Angelo Dundee, he teamed up with me, and we went out and got the win that night with Michael Nunn. So, you know, if it wasn't for Muhammad Ali, those things wouldn't have transpired, because when we were young, he put five of our siblings in a, that's younger than me, there's 10 in my family, in a ice cream commercial called St. John's Ice Cream. It was known as, we were known as the Ali Gang. And there was a campaign with Frank Sinatra. It says, help fight tooth decay. And I still remember the saying, St. John's Ice Cream is good to eat. It fills your stomach and saves your teeth. The great fight for tooth decay back there. And Frank Sinatra and all of them were on the album that for that campaign. Ali was something special, believe me when I tell you.
Well, I used a football analogy yesterday on the show, and I said that one of the reasons why I feel like the Steelers in the 70s were the greatest dynasty, winning four times in 6 years, was that they won the first two with great defense, a running game, and the passing game went along. The last two they won because they had a great defense, but they threw the ball a lot and then ran. They won with two different styles. Is Ali's, Ali's greatness in part because, look, he really did have two different styles before the Supreme Court and after the Supreme Court?
Well, Ali, he can make fundamental adjustments naturally that you can't teach. It was just something, a gifted athlete that God had anoints them with something, and they have a second nature about it. And you're right, Ali had a very offensive, quick, flamboyant style when he was young. And then after the exile with the Army draft, his style changed. He slowed down. You know, his loss to Joe Frazier when he got knocked down and off the deck. Then Ali worked on fighting down off his feet a lot, where sometimes he would have to come down off his feet and fight guys flat-footed. And he learned how to do that. Ali is much an offensive fighter. He was a good defensive fighter, too, as you've seen with George Foreman. And that big win with George Foreman helped me later on in my life bring Mike Tyson back from a defeat that he had against Buster Douglas.
Yeah.
Also with the major win with Frankie Randall and Tim Austin getting his jaw broke. Tim was a 1992 bronze medal Olympic winner. He was on the team with Oscar De La Hoya. Tim got his jaw broke in the first round and fought eight rounds with a broken jaw and knocked Mutilli out. Oh, that was on Showtime television to win the bantamweight championship of the world and then stay champions for a 10-year period. But Ali was the one, when all the odds were against him in that George Foreman fight up in Deer Lake before they went to Africa, everybody thought he was going to lose. He was going to get, you know, just annihilated. And Ali kept telling everybody what he was going to do, how he was going to do it. And then those great fighters that Ali was around, he would talk to them. He would pick their brain. Ali was masterful at it. You know, he would sit around and talk to Ike Williams and Kit Gavilan and Stanley Sadler and those guys. And he would try to Gracian on them. And he would put all of them guys against each other in a joking way. You know, what would you do if he fought this guy and he fought you? What would you do to him? How would you handle this punch and that punch? in certain defenses that he was around. But a lot, too, Joe Louis. Ollie spent time with Joe Louis, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that. The Brown Bomber, Ollie spent a lot of time, and Ollie would talk about that. And Ollie was the first one to tell me about Jack Johnson.
Yeah.
Jack Johnson was, in his day, Jack Johnson was something. He was like a Muhammad Ali of his day, Jack Johnson. And when I later found out that Ali's second wife, Belinda Khadija, now is her Muslim name, but she was the one that told him, because she was doing some research for Elijah Muhammad. And when Ali got and found out about Jack Johnson, he took off with it. And he ended up the Great White Hope play and film that they did in the New York stages. But, yeah, Ali would pick people's brains for those fights. And later on in life, by being around them and listening to them and paying attention, and he teaching all the time. Ali was a masterful teacher.
Aaron, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Your great experience along the way is, with all the great fighters you, of course, trained, and giving us more insight into Muhammad Ali. Aaron, thank you so much. Aaron Snoll, former trainer for Mike Tyson, Tim Austin, Tim Weatherspoon, Larry Donald, among others. He trained 32 champions in his career, did Aaron Snoll. And by the way, his sister teaches at Penn State Schuylkill. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Phillies on tomorrow against the Cubs. So no show tomorrow. We'll come back on Thursday with Tony Knopp, the CEO of Spotlight Ticket Management. We'll talk about the business of sports. And then Dick Girardi will join us to talk about the Belmont and also his experience with Muhammad Ali that was written about in the Daily News over the weekend. Dick banged out that story after his golf round here at the Coaches versus Cancer tournament, went back to his hotel, knocked out the story, then showed up at the awards banquet. And he should have shown up at the awards banquet. His team ended up winning. So we'll have Dick on the show on Friday. Then next Wednesday, we'll be at the U.S. Open Golf Championship at Oakmont. Try to take you as many places as we can. And that'll be one I think a lot of people enjoy. Looking forward to that very much. Great course, Oakmont. Traditional U.S. Open course. I think this will be the ninth time they've hosted the U.S. Open Golf Championship.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it's on both sides of the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
It is. It is. As a matter of fact, Ron Moeller, yes, the Ron Moeller, who was in the booth with Jack Ham and me, is working the 14th hole. And my first reaction was, it must be an easy one. No, so he's working out at 14. But we will be there next Wednesday. And we're looking forward to it very, very much. And things will kick back into gear for me next week, as a matter of fact. We've got Monday, I've got to do something for her. They're doing a documentary on Big Ten Network about the 2008 season, so I'm being interviewed for that. And then they also want to do some stuff on Saquon Barkley, too. I'm like, okay. And then off to the U.S. Open. I know we don't have a show next Tuesday, but Tuesday and Wednesday I'm going to be there. And, of course, the show there Wednesday. And then the Spikes season starts up. Back to my natural habitat, play-by-play. But we've got Tony Knopp on Thursday, business, Dick Girardi on Friday, along with Tony DeFazio, and then the U.S. Open next Wednesday. Not bad. Not bad at all. And we're going to start really getting into more Penn State football. The Live for Life, by the way, is going to be July 16th. So Saturday, July 16th, will be the Live for Life. That's coming up. And the players, the freshmen, are back on campus, I want to say June 25th. Right around there. Should be the 25th that they're all on campus, because then they'll start the second summer session. They'll all be here. So all the freshmen will be here. All the players will be here. And start getting geared up for another season. And there's a lot of areas of Penn State football I'm going to talk about over the next few weeks. One is that I've talked repeatedly about recruiting balance, and that Penn State's recruiting balance with the sanctions was thrown so out of whack that, A, you were trying to catch up with numbers, and, B, you were trying to get a proper balance on the football team. Now they're there. They've got 81 scholarship players on the team. Right now, as things would hold, they'd be able to sign 15 guys in the next recruiting class. They don't have a lot of seniors on the team, only 11. But positionally, they're about where they need to be positionally. Now, you've heard over the years, for example, that James Franklin, for example, likes to take a quarterback in every recruiting class. So he likes to have five quarterbacks, positional balance. But now they're at four quarterbacks coming up down the road. And that's where actually Joe Moorhead likes to be. So you're going to stick in that area, try and keep it to four scholarship quarterbacks as an example. So that's just an adjustment that they've made. Now, they like to have 16 offensive linemen as an example. But there are a couple guys that they like to have that have some versatility as to where they can play on the offensive line. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as time goes. Our thanks to Aaron Stoll, Mike Tyson's former trainer, being on the show today. Mark Brennan, Fight On State, and Matt Leon. We'll talk to you Thursday.
We're your home for news, sports, weather, and your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.